Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children and anarchists of all ages, welcome to the Dark Lord Reapers United States of Anarchy podcast. Who am I? I'm the Dark Lord himself, the Nightmare King, giving you unapologetic truth, hardcore facts, and occasionally we act fun over here. If you're looking for celebrity gossip, this is not the podcast for you. This podcast is for real topics and real situations for real people. Don't like what I have to say? Two words. Don't listen. Boycott my podcast. Boycott my social media. Boycott anything that has my name attached to it. It's that simple, people. Happy New Year! We made it, people. I know it's been a while since you heard this lovely voice, but here I am. I'm back with you. And I hope you're here with me too, people. So we gonna start this year off the same way we always started off. We gonna start it off on a good note with some TV, movie, video game, toy, food, and pop culture reviews. So, in advance, spoiler alert, if you have not watched these shows, so let's get into it. And we're back, people. So we are doing TV, movie, video game, toy, food reviews. So in this segment, I wanted to go over the Netflix smash hit Wednesday, which is focusing on Wednesday Addams, the daughter of the Addams family. Now, I'm going to go over my loves and hates of season one. Now, spoiler alert. Okay, so if you haven't seen it, skip over this part of the podcast, of the episode, and then come back to it. Okay, I gave you fair warning. So, what I liked. Tim Burton did an excellent job with the aesthetics and the visuals. He did a great job. Well, it's Tim Burton. He's the king of goth cinema. So, he did a good job. Here's what I did not like. They made Wednesday Addams come off as she was trying too hard to be this gothy, edgy girl. Especially when they sent her to the school, Nevermore, which is a school for kids and people like her. Like, if you have watched most older iterations of the Addams Family and you paid attention to the character of Wednesday Addams, you would notice that she wasn't that grim of a person. Like, she had moments that she was happy and she wasn't trying to be really all that edgy. That's just really who she was. But I felt that in this instance of the episode of this iteration of her, where it focused mainly on her, it was trying a little bit too hard in that regard. Here's another thing I did not. This is something I really did not like. The one thing from the show that has gone viral. That horrible, that dance that the actress did that has gone viral. And people are saying, oh, that's how goths dance. Clearly, none of you know any goth people. You don't know anyone from the scene. None of us dance like that. In fact, Wednesday Addams does not dance like that. She, the character, dances. Now, she did do, now I will give her this. She did do a little mini tribute to the original dances that Wednesday Addams used to do from the older black and white storyline. So I'll give him that. But that's my dislike. Now, here's what I liked. Oh, one more of my dislike. Two more, actually, of my dislike. Pugsley Addams. They made Pugsley seem like a pushover in the opening scene where they stuffed him in the locker. We all know if you pull a stunt like that on Pugsley Addams or Wednesday Addams, God help you. We all know that. You ain't gonna stuff him in a locker and he doesn't come reprise you himself in a very horrible way. In fact, most people in the town, in their storyline, knows don't mess with the Addams, with the Addams family. Stay on their good side, or just stay out of their way. Everyone knows this. So, that was, like, that is what I did. That's another thing I didn't like. And one more thing, I did not like that they made Wednesday seem as if she had a rivalry and a disdain for her mother, where that's not the case. She looks up to and adores her mom. So that's what I did. That's what I did. Now, here's what I like and what I think was done beautifully. The casting. The casting was done beautifully. Like I said, the visuals and the casting was done beautifully. They got it right in terms of who they should have playing certain roles, despite what some people may say. A lot of people did not like who they picked for Gomez Adams. I think that was an excellent choice, for the simple fact that if you watch the cartoons and the early illustrations, the actor was picked perfectly. Catherine Zeta-Jones as Morticia Adams, excellent, amazing. That's the only other character I could have seen pulling off that role. Now, here's one more thing that I like. This is what I really love. And this was everyone's, I took a poll, and this was everyone's favorite part of the series. Thing. Thing looked grisly. He looked amazing. I loved Thing. I loved him. I loved how he looked. I liked how it was not done. He didn't look clean and prim and proper. He looked like grisly, gory. And hopefully we get an answer as to what makes Thing Thing. Like, where did he come from? You know, because Wednesday allured to it, like one of, she said, and I quote, one of the Adams family's many secrets. I like that. And now we know where the classic da-na-na-na snap comes from. We know where that snap comes from. So I like that. I like that. Now, the opening scene where it's revealed that Wednesday Adams has been kicked out of multiple schools for one reason or another. What she did to the jocks in the swimming team, pretty accurate. That's exactly what would happen to you if you messed with the Adams family. They would do something grisly and grimy to you to send you a message. So I enjoyed that part. Now let's get to Nevermore, the school Nevermore, where Wednesday is sent to. A lot of aesthetics. Oh, shots out to the OG Wednesday Adams, Christina Ricci. We didn't even recognize her. I like that they showed it as like a passing of the torch to the next generation. It has been confirmed that we are getting season 2 of Wednesday. Hopefully we get to see more of Pugsley, and I hope they change it up that he's not so much of a puss-puss, because I didn't like that. Because we all know Pugsley is like that guy. Like, he's the guy that, he's not going to start with you, but if you start with him, he's going to finish it with you. He's going to finish it permanently. So I liked, so I'm interested to see what Tim Burton and the team working on that show, what they have in store for season 2. I also liked who they picked to play Uncle Fester. That was hilarious. I found that so funny. A lot of people didn't like it, but I did like it. And I think if we do get another spinoff, it should focus on Uncle Fester. It really should. But should it? We should get more of a backstory on the Addams Family. Because now we know how Morticia met Gomez and their love affair and what happened. So we found out about a secret society called the Nightshades. I thought that was a cool name. And we actually, there's a metal band called Nightshade. So that's also pretty cool. I just wanted to point that out. So you have my likes, my dislikes. I hope, like, I like the aesthetics. I like the visuals. Tim Burton did an amazing job. I didn't like that when they tried to make Wednesday come off as too. They wanted her, she was forcing to be dark and edgy when she really wasn't that much dark and edgy. She was, but at the same time, she wasn't, to a certain extent. But you would think a school like Nevermore, she would be at home and she would like it. I also like the roommate that they put her in. It's like a nice contrast. I like that. I like that they also mention the fact that she plays music, and they show that she picked up fencing, something she got from her dad. And we've seen that Gomez had legal issues in the town. But I'm interested to see what happens in season two, considering how season one ended. So that's my review of Wednesday. So when we come back, I am going to review a hidden Netflix gem that I recently discovered, Alice in Borderland. And we're back. So we are doing movie, video game, trailer, toy, and food reviews, ladies and gentlemen. So in this segment, we are going to go over the Netflix gem, Alice in Borderland, which is basically the Japanese, what most people would classify as the Japanese version of Squid Game. Season 2 is supposed to be coming out later on this year, according to my sources. But Alice in Borderland, unlike Squid Games, is based on a manga by Haro Ishii, and it's been around for a while. It basically starts as a lot of people trapped in an abandoned Tokyo to compete in a dangerous game, and the type of difficulties are represented on playing cards. Now let's focus on, you could say, the main character. His name is, I wrote it down, Arzu Horinheim. I can't pronounce his last name. He basically is upset. Basically, the guy plays video games a lot, but he's a genius. He's really a genius. He meets a girl, a mountain climber, an adventurer called Usagi, during when he got sucked into the game with his friends. So each game is difficulty is represented by one of the cards. The heart game is basically getting you to work, go again, play on your selfish nature. A club's card, it's gonna be violent. It's a kid game. It's a kill game. It was very good. It touched on a lot of topics. Really good character development. I must say, I wish there was room for season 3, but it ended well. I enjoyed it for what it was. I give the series 10 out of 10. If you like Squid Games, you will like Alice in Borderland. There were a few scenes in there that were tough to watch, and it showed that it's sad that it's only during tragedies or catastrophic situations that we as a people come together, and not just only through tragedy. It shouldn't be that way. But it was a fun watch. It's you gotta be really into it. Once you get into it, you'll want more and more and more and more. So that's my review for season 1 and season 2 of Alice in Borderland. No spoilers, as you can see. So when we come back, we are gonna get into a new personal favorite. It's my new obsession. It's a Netflix gem that I just discovered. High and Low. When we come back, we're going to talk about High and Low. And we're back, ladies and gentlemen. So we are going over TV, movie, video game, trailer, toy, and food reviews. So in this segment, I am going to review another Netflix gem. This one is a hidden gem that I stumbled across, and I found it and I enjoyed it. And it is entitled The High and Low movie series, based on the TV show and manga High and Low. Now let me give you guys a quick backstory. Spoiler alert. So High and Low is focused on a neighborhood, poor and disenfranchised neighborhood that has been called Sword, or in Japanese, G-Sword. So in G-Sword, there was a group that rose up to protect their neighborhood called Mugen Racing Team. The Mugen Racing Team, which you could say is a biker club. And they rose to be 100 members deep, 100 strong. And they kept the hooligans and the corporations that wanted to come in and do stuff horribly, right? So shortly after that, mostly people just either get down or lay down. They weren't tyrannical, but they weren't bullies. They weren't bullies, but they didn't bother people. They were just, you know, about riding their bikes and doing what they wanted to do. They acted like a 1% club, but they weren't really a 1% club per se. So there was only two brothers that could stand up to them. Literally two brothers. And in the movie clip, flashback clips, you see the two brothers beat down 100 members of Mugen. Like 2 versus 100. You would think there's no win there. But anyway, for some reason, the two brothers disappeared from the neighborhood. And as a result, plus the assassination, which was supposed to be an accident, looked like an accident, of the leader of Mugen, Mugen Racing Club Racing Team disbanded, and in its place, 5 new crews appeared. And each name of the crew, took their name based on a letter from the word sword, which is why, like, you know, sword is a 5-letter word, so 5 letters. So 5 gangs. So I'm going to quickly go over the gangs. So the main gang was Sanho Hoodlum Squad. Basically, it was founded by 2 members that used to be down with Mugen. And they still ride Harleys, but they just don't wear cuts. They look like everyday people that ride bikes. The main leader's name is Cobra, and his second-in-command is Yamato. Both of them were members of Mugen. So they're the S in sword. The W in sword stands for the White Rascals. Now, don't let their appearance fool you. They look like something like a cross between pop stars and pimps, but they are as rough and tumble as they're come. And their leader's name is Rocky. Like, this guy, he has like the smoothest white furs, and in a fist fight, they don't get dirty. I just noticed that. So that's the White Rascals. The O in sword stands for Oya High School. Now, this is an interesting high school because they have their own internal fighting. They have the part-time students versus the full-time students. A lot of the members are actually like, the part-timers are usually guys that are in their 20s. And when they go to fight, they have a whole like 18-wheeler truck that they load up in to go as backup if they need, you know, fist fight. The leader of the part-timers, who is like the overall leader of Oya High, is Makamugen, or something to that. I hope I said his name. So they wear blue, so you wouldn't know them any different from a Crip gang member, funny enough. So that's Oya High School. So now you have R. Now this particular group, their part of town is called the Nameless City. The R in sword stands for my personal favorite group, the Rude Boys. Now they're free runners, and like their territory is where a factory used to be. So there's a lot of big rigs and stuff that they can jump off of. Their leader's name is Smokey. And now the D in sword stands for the Dormammu family. And their leader's name is Hyuga. They wear red. You can't tell them any different from a blood gang member, but their group is, they have like one of the larger groups out of the 5. So that makes up the 5 groups within sword. And then you have groups outside of that. You have a new group called the Mighty Warriors. They're Japanese, but they actually speak English. They speak English because they've traveled. They do hip-hop songs, like they'll get into a fight and then make a diss song and perform it in front of their crowd. They own a club called Jungle Fury. So that's the Mighty Warriors. And then you have another group who basically is Yakuza, but they're not saying they're Yakuza, called Doubt. So they live outside of Sword. And then you have the Kairyu corporation. They're basically Yakuza. They're made up of 9 different factions that are just one group, and each leader is referred to as the 9 dragons. So it's very interesting to watch. A lot of, if you can find the TV series, I highly recommend it. It's on Netflix. If you like action and martial arts fights, you'll enjoy High versus Low. And it also crosses over with a franchise that I have reviewed on this podcast before called Crow Zero. So please go check it out. It's worth your while. So when we come back, we are going to go over the recently released Puss in Boots: Last Wish. And we're back. So in this segment, I wanted to go over Puss in Boots: The Last Wish. Now, in advance, spoiler alert. I enjoyed this. I enjoyed Puss in Boots: The Last Wish. I give it a 4 out of 5. Speaking of 5, apparently it has been revealed that we are going to get Shrek 5. So I'm interested to see who's going to be the big baddie and what's going to happen in the next Shrek movie. But let's focus on Puss in Boots for a second, people. So, Puss in Boots in this series is up to his usual hijinks, and he is informed that he has burned through 8 of his 9 lives. And he is recommended by his doctor and his / barber to retire from his life of adventure. And he doesn't want to until he meets the most, basically, in my opinion, the most menacing and possibly the big baddie of fairy tale land. And this person has always been the big bad guy. And this introduction has to be like one of the best introductions I have seen in terms of movies. You guessed it, ladies and gentlemen. The Big Bad Wolf. So the Big Bad Wolf in the Shrek mythos is a bounty hunter. And he basically puts the fear of God in Puss in Boots. And that eerie whistle he does. Something to that effect, like it's reminiscent of the live-action Negan from The Walking Dead, like an eerie whistle. So Puss in Boots decides to, you know, take his doctor's advice and go to a home for cats and live out his last days. He meets a dog who is basically like a nice person to the point where it irritates Puss in Boots. And then we are introduced to Goldilocks and the 3 Bears, who are actually bounty hunters / con people like themselves. It was really good. It had a real serious message at the end. And we actually meet Jack Horner, who is the big baddie, alongside the Big Bad Wolf, Jack Horner. But he's Big Jack Horner, and he's somewhat of a mob boss. So I enjoyed that for what it was, and I found it pretty hilarious. So, ladies and gentlemen, when we come back, I'm going to go over some trailers and some news. And we're back. So we're doing TV, movie, video game, trailer, toy, and food reviews. So in this segment, we're going to go over a few trailers. So the first trailer I wanted to touch on is Season 6, the final season of Snowfall. Now, we saw how the last season ended. Franklin Saint decided to go to war against his Aunt Lou and his uncle because of what happened to him last season. So this season is going to be interesting to watch. Let's see what happens. It has been revealed that Season 5 of Mayan MC will be the final season. I am heartbroken by this. You could at least given us 2 more seasons, man. 2 more. Sons of Anarchy at least got 2 more. But Season 5, okay, I'll accept that for what it is. So we actually also got a trailer for the next DC animated film, Batman, a Batman film. It's said to take place in the 1920s. It's similar to Gotham by Gaslight, from what I've seen. And it looks interesting to watch. I'm looking forward to seeing that. What other trailers did we get? Okay, so we got those trailers. Oh, yes. Let me go over the trailer that was revealed earlier last year for the new Hellboy video game that is set to come out later on this year. It's following the animation from the comic books. So I'm interested to see who's going to be the voice actor. The action looks pretty cool. I actually like it for what it is. So that's what I got for trailers at the moment. So when we come back, I'm going to review the latest season of Godfather of Harlem. And we're back, ladies and gentlemen. So in this segment, I wanted to go over the much anticipated season 3 of Godfather of Harlem. So, in advance, spoiler alert. So, season 3 picks up right where season 2 left off. After the first assassination attempt on Malcolm X and the riots. So, as a result of the cooperation from Chinchaganti's daughter, he's been put in prison. So the new boss for that family is Johnny Colombo. That name should sound familiar, people, because that was one of the leaders of the real five families. And quick backstory, even though this is a fictional story, ladies and gentlemen, most of the figures that we see in this TV series are based on real people. Chinchaganti was a real person. Bumpy Johnson was a real person. The pastor, Williams, he was a real person as well. So now that we've covered that, so Bumpy Johnson, played by Lawrence Fishburne, he's basically reeling off of losing the big shipment of heroin during the riots. So now he's up to his eyeballs in debt. Right now and it's also inconvenient that there was a transition of power thanks to the daughter of Chinchaganti. So Columbo, he's obviously not like Chinchaganti. He's a little bit more ruthless. And we all know how Bumpy is. He basically wants to hold on to his control of Harlem because he always says Harlem is his. We're introduced to new groups, like street gangs. We're introduced to them this season. And we're seeing like the shift in power with Malcolm X when he makes his pilgrimage to Africa to get the African leaders. Malcolm gets to have a face-to-face with his would-be assassin. And he gets the explanation as to why you wanted to kill him. And basically, it comes down to jealousy. And I always say a jealous person is more dangerous than a hater. Because a hater is someone who talks crap about you from afar. They probably can't even come within 10 feet of you. There's nothing they can do about you than to run their mouth. A person that's jealous of you, a person that's envious of you, is right next to you. And they're more dangerous than anything, because a person that's jealous of you, you don't know who they are. You don't know their heart. And they know all your intimacies. So keep that in mind. Remember I taught you that, ladies and gentlemen. So Bumpy Johnson is basically, oh yeah, so this is one thing that happened. So Columbo goes and approaches Bumpy Johnson's wife. And in that world, and in this world, that's a no-no. If you have an issue with a man, you take it up with that man. You don't approach his wife, you don't approach his children, you don't approach his family, you take it up with that man. So that's a big no-no. You don't do that. You don't involve people's families into personal issues. So basically, Bumpy robbed in the first episode, you see Bumpy Johnson robbing the first black bank to pay off the debt that he had to the mob, to the Italian mob. Now, what makes the storyline interesting, because the real Bumpy Johnson fought the Italian mob for years, and he helped them take out the Dutchman, Dutch Schillinger, who was a real issue for the Italian mob commission. And it's also a historical fact that he had a great relationship with Lucky Luciano, the man who actually set up the commission. See, another history lesson right there. So, I'm liking this season of Godfather Pong so far. I'm going to watch the new episode today, and I will get back to you guys in another review to let you know how I feel about that. So, that's the end of my review of Godfather of Harlem. When we come back, I am going to review the trailer for the much-anticipated Season 2 of Power Book 2 Ghost. And we're back, ladies and gentlemen. So in this segment, I'm going to go over the trailer for the much-anticipated Season 3 of Power Book 2 Ghost. Man, this trailer gave us so much, and I'm pretty sure we're not seeing everything. Power Book 2 Ghost should be coming over. It's supposed to set to be released in March 17th this year. Ironically, on St. Patrick's Day, that's when the new season of Power Book 2 is going to be released. So let's go over what we saw in the trailer so far. We saw the funeral for Zeke. Obviously, that is Zeke's funeral. And we see everyone carrying his casket, whatever. So we know for a fact that Monet Tejada is going, played by the lovely, talented, legendary Mary J. Blige. We know she's going to be on the warpath behind this, not knowing that her son's murderer is someone she shares a bed with, Lorenzo Tejada. I wonder how he's going to explain himself. So anyway, the last season we saw that the federal agent that was investigating Tariq St. Patrick's father, Tariq is back on her radar, because remember, they killed her CI, who also happens to be the father of Zeke. So that put Tariq right back where he once was, even though he's not the trigger man in this case. So we see Diana hooking up with who appears to be 2-Bit. Now, if you guys remember 2-Bit, he's a character that came over from the original Power series, and he used to work for Tommy. He answered to Tommy directly. And I'm hoping that we get to see Power Book 5 Force with Tommy, because last season was, it was off the hook. So we see Tariq holding a bloody knife. So it makes me wonder if Kane is still on his BS trying to take out Tariq. Because if jealousy was a person, it would be Kane Tejada. So in the last season, we also saw Knox, because of what happened to Tariq's girlfriend, Lauren, at the hands of Tariq's other girlfriend, what's her name? Her name escapes me at the moment. Knox is making it a mission to take down the Tejada family. So that's another issue. But the trailer ends with Tariq holding a gun, and them saying that you just started a war. So if that's the case, because now we're going to see what Tariq is really made of. Because honestly, I'm tired of seeing this. For someone so smart, I'm tired of seeing him get his ass kicked. Like, just about everybody has punched this guy in the face, and he has had no way of physically fighting them. But he may not be a fighter, but he is a shooter, and a pretty good one at that, because he shot a few people and have yet to get caught. I guess it's true what they say. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree. So I'm excited to see season three of Power. I mean, season three of Power Book Two, Ghost. So the trailer is phenomenal. Well written. Shouts out to the man 50 Cent. Speaking of 50 Cent, when we come back, we are going to go over the first four episodes of season two of BMF. And we're back, ladies and gentlemen. So in this segment, I wanted to go over BMF season two. Now, season one ended on a cliffhanger. So season two picks up right where season one left off. It picks up showing Southwest T, the brother of Big Meech, being arrested. Like the last meeting of BMF, like the original BMF members before they were arrested. So it goes back into where we left off. So T is trying to live a straight or earn straight, you know, starting his car company with his dad. And they're butting heads a lot because the dad wants to stay local, but T wants to expand a business where he can say he's making the same kind of money that he was when he was hustling with Demetrius, his brother. Big Meech, on the other hand, he decided to expand. He's expanding his territory, you know, and he recruited the 12 Street Boys, his former rivals, into BMF. You know, the Black Mafia family. So, and it is revealed the biggest shocker of this season. Lamar the Beast is still alive. He survived the shot that Meech gave him. Now, this is something that puzzled me because it's like he was shot at point blank range. So how did he survive? And Officer Brown, the officer that used to be on Meech's payroll, he's hell bent on getting Meech up out of, to get Meech and take down his organization. And he's got Meech's right hand man, B. Mickey, in a bind. Because he's got the same gun that was used on one of their victims, whose name escapes me, and the love of his life, Kato. Quick side note, the person that Kato is based on, she's very much still alive, and she did an interview. As well as the person that Lamar is based on is very much still alive. So we go to Meech's parents, Meech's and T's parents. So their relationship is rocky at the moment because, you know, the bills, whatever the case may be. So she finds, you know, Playboy girly mags in his music thing. So, and now one of the church sisters is pushing up on Meech's and T's dad. So I'm watching to see if he's going to give into temptation or is he going to steadfast and stand strong. Let's see what's going to happen there, ladies and gentlemen. I'm interested to see what's going to happen. So the last episode, we see Lamar. He made an attempt at Meech's life in the previous episode. He shot him 3 times, but he did not get him. So Meech and him, Big Meech was brought down to the police station and him and Lamar have a face-to-face. And Meech, they basically were talking to each other in code. But they basically were saying like, yeah, this only stops when one of us is dead. So we see that Lamar has a glascomy bag from where he got shot. And he's telling his friend, like, man, I don't feel like myself. He's like, yo, you got to show people that you're still the beast. So what does he do? Lamar goes on a warpath. The first thing he does, he tracks down a couple of guys that work for Meech. He beats one to death with a 2x4 that had a nail in it and emptied. This had to be the biggest disrespect I ever seen. It's bad enough you got a guy with a 2x4 and the nail got in his neck and killed him, but he emptied his Glascomy bag on him. It's like, what the hell? Then he broke into the other guy's house, beat him, and strangled him with his shower curtain, suffocating the shower curtain. So, and this had to be the stupidest thing. So T stepped in to help Meech move his product from state to state, whatever the case is. And T decided to use his worker to move the weight. And they got, and she got caught with it. And she got caught. So now both of them are on the run. And they're like, yeah, they're gonna flip her. They're gonna flip her. That was, T is supposed to be the smart one, but that had to be the stupidest thing I've ever seen. But he didn't leave town before he finally got Lala. Lala, she is everywhere now. She's on BMF. She's on The Shy. She's on Power. Well, she was on Power. Her character got killed off. But you guys know what I mean. She's everywhere. She's doing her thing. Shout out to Lala Anthony. She is everywhere. So the episode ends with Big Meech and T going down south to Atlanta. So this is when they establish their Atlanta, their Atlanta contacts. So now we are going to see, we're going to be introduced to a new character who will be played by the very talented, very funny Monique. Now, the last time we saw Monique in a major project was Precious. And she did a phenomenal job. But we all know the story about her, why her career got, you know, sidetracked. If you know, you know. If you don't know, you know. So, that's it for my review on Power Book on BMX, sorry. When we come back, I'm going to go over the new season of Vox Machina. And we're back, ladies and gentlemen. So we are going over season 2 of Vox Machina, the first few episodes that we got so far, ladies and gentlemen. In advance, spoiler alert, spoiler alert, spoiler alert. Okay, you've been warned. So, season 2 picks up right where it left off. And it left with a huge cliffhanger, ladies and gentlemen. It left with a huge cliffhanger. So, the members of Vox Machina return to the city. Enmon, and they are being celebrated for saving the city and saving the world from that family, the Necromancer family, and, you know, liberating the town that Percival came from, their comrade. Only to find out something is crazy, that something bad is about to happen. So, the Sovereign, Urel, he's talking to the crowd about, like, you know, how Vox Machina saved them. So, he said that he is relinquishing his throne and giving the rule over to the council. So, we hear bells ringing, meaning there's a warning. So, we look up, we see not one, not two, but four dragons, and they call themselves the Chroma Conclave. And despite efforts from the armies, Vox Machina, the dragons lay waste to the city of Edmond, and all they could do was evacuate people. That's all they could do. So the royal family is everything, like, you know. So we have the original members. Scalen, the gnome with the magical hand that comes from his lute when he plays music. Grog the Muscle, Vex Keyleth, Percival. We got everyone's around. So we noticed something with Grog. He got a new sword because his axe was broken. His axe got broken. He kept the sword that he fought the vampire lord. That vampire lord fought. But that sword, just like Percival's gun, has a curse on it. And it talks to him. And we know that he's not the most intellectual guy. So it starts there. So that was the rise of the season. First episode was the rise of the... The rise of the Conclave. So ultimately, the episode was, it was like crazy. It was a crazy episode. So I'm liking this season. I'm going to keep watching and I'm going to give you episode by episode. So that was the first episode. Season 2, Episode 1, Rise of the Chroma Conclave. So when we come back, I am going to review another trailer for a much-anticipated Amazon animated TV series, Invincible. And we're back. So in this segment, I wanted to talk about the new series for Spider-Man, Dark Web, which picks up right after the previous story arc with Spider-Man. Now, they've been doing a lot of interesting things with Spider-Man in the last couple of issues, but this one is pretty good. We revisit the character Ben Reilly, the clone of Peter Parker, and he was basically Scarlet Spider, for those of you who are not familiar with the comics. So he finally gets a storyline where he teams up with Madeline Pryor. Now, if most of you, for those of you who do not know who Madeline Pryor is, she is the clone of Jean Grey from the X-Men. A lot of cloning going on around here, wouldn't you say? So the both of them are upset at the person that they are cloned from, because apparently they do not have the memories that they thought they're supposed to have. So they devise a plan, because Madeline Pryor was put in charge of Limbo, and she has an agreement with the X-Men. It's a pretty shitty agreement, but it's an agreement nonetheless. So now it led to Ben Reilly having a face-off with Peter Parker. Now, in the last time Ben Reilly and Spider-Man went at each other, Ben Reilly fell into some toxic waste because he was working for the Beyond Corporation. Because prior to this, Peter Parker got sick and was in the hospital, so Ben Reilly stepped in as the new Spider-Man. So when he became Spider-Man, the Beyond Corporation bought the rights and properties and royalties to the name Spider-Man. So when Peter Parker came back, as well as Miles Morales, both of them were given a cease and desist to stop saying that they are Spider-Man. Funny, right? But anyway, the two of them had a fist fight, and Ben Reilly fell into some goo, and it gave him new powers. And he started calling himself Chasm. It's a pretty good arc, but I don't care for the ending, because it's just like, really? All of this could have been squashed with a simple conversation? Really now? So that's that comic. That's that story arc that I read, and it's actually pretty good. I also want to touch on the new Batman failsafe. Now, if you've been keeping up with Batman in the comics lately, you would know after the Joker War, he's not as rich as he once used to be, because Joker blew all his cash because he figured out that Bruce Wayne, is Batman. He blew all his cash. He
So Batman basically said, I need to go back to basics. So an old storyline came back, was revisited, where the Batman came up with a plan for all of the members of the Justice League in a robot that he called Failsafe. And Failsafe was to activate should Batman cross the line and actually kill someone. Well, the Penguin apparently got hurt somehow, and the Batman went to see him for whatever reason, and the Penguin died, and people believe Batman did it, and he did not do it. So Failsafe activated, and no one within the Justice League could stop this robot. So eventually it zapped Batman to an alternate universe. So a lot of people have the misconception that he is dead. It's a really good storyline. I hope everyone goes and checks it out for themselves. And with that being said, I'm going to end this episode here. Tune into my next episode where I address a recent event that has happened and it's unavoidable talking about. Until then, always Rage Against the Machine. Love, peace, and chicken grease. Deuces!